This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. A big chunk of private sector infrastructure opens at New York's JFK Airport today. It's the new Delta Airlines terminal. $1.6 billion worth of lounge, gates, and new ways to contemplate your navel waiting to check in at security. Delta recently picked an interesting fight with the federal government. Delta thinks America's Import-Export Bank should stop subsidizing foreign airlines when they buy wide-bodied Boeing jets. I sat down with Delta's chief executive officer, Richard Anderson, to talk about this and other matters. Mr. Anderson, welcome.
You're very kind to have me here. I listen to your show often.
Knock me over with a feather, Mr. Anderson. The airlines as a group made money last year, something like $200 million. You too?
Well, Delta had a quite profitable year last year, and 2013 will be the fourth year in a row of significant profitability, and 2013 should be our most profitable year in our history.
What's going on? Fuel prices are coming down a little bit for you.
Well, fuel prices have come down, but it's almost the quintessential American story of aviation in the U.S. If you think back to 9/11, the industry was rocked by 9/11. Then we had fuel prices run from $20 a barrel to $150 a barrel. Then we went through the financial crisis. And through all of that, without any government intervention, we remade ourselves. And, you know, today Delta is the most profitable airline in the United States, if not the most profitable in the world.
We may be coming out the other side of the era of airline mergers. There was U and Northwest a few years ago, and then Airline U merged with C, and then Airline A merged with the letters U and S. I thought more competition is generally better than less competition in an industry.
Well, when you think about the vitality of the U.S. airline industry, we need a strong, vital airline industry. And the industry went through, after deregulation, a fair amount of consolidation. And now you essentially, if the U.S. Air-American merger, when it's approved, will have four really big, strong airlines in the U.S. And when you think about the necessity of having a strong airline industry, you can have a strong airline industry and at the same time have a very contestable, competitive marketplace because you have four big players that each have the capital to invest in their employees and in airplanes and in communities and in customers.
You're the biggest at the moment?
Well, you know, we don't think about trying to be the biggest. We like to think about being the best. At this point in time, when you look at the size and scale of our network and 6,000 flights a day, you know, you're essentially at scale. And by passenger count, we have the most passengers in the world with around 160 million passengers a year.
I have to ask you something. Delta has a beef with the U.S. government subsidizing airlines when they want to buy Boeing planes. Now, you're an airline. You don't like a nice subsidy to buy planes?
Well, U.S. carriers do not receive the subsidy. And the subsidy takes the form of financing. So the United States Treasury regularly finances my foreign-owned competitors. So Delta's foreign-owned competitors, most of which are government airlines, my government finances them to compete against Delta with submarket financing on the United States government balance sheet.
And you don't like that?
Well, it just doesn't seem like my government should be financing my competitors who are owned and operated by large governments overseas. All we want is a level playing field. And so our objection is a narrow objection. We think the Ex-Im Bank does good work generally, but wide-body financing, if there was no wide-body financing, which is really our only complaint.
Financing for the wide-body jets,
just
yeah.
Wide-body passenger airlines to state-owned and state-subsidized enterprises, the private marketplace would fill up the need for that financing. So General Electric, ILFC, there are many leasing companies and finance companies in the world, given the liquidity of markets, that can provide this service at market rate. So there's really no need for us at a time when we're running huge deficits to be using the U.S. Treasury to finance competitors to the U.S. aviation industry, because really in the end it comes down to employment. When our government finances our competitors at below market rates, that hurts employment in the U.S. aviation industry. And so all we want is a level playing field. We do not want government financing for our airplanes. We think it's important.
But if you got rid of it, it might not produce a level playing field, because I guarantee if we got Boeing on the phone right now, they would say correctly that the Europeans subsidize the purchases of Airbus planes.
It's interesting. As you might guess, Delta operates a very large fleet of Airbus airplanes and a very large fleet of Boeing airplanes. I talked to the leadership of Boeing and I talked to the leadership of Airbus. And oddly enough, Airbus says if Boeing doesn't get it, they won't take it. And Boeing says if Airbus doesn't get it, they won't take it. So I think they've both stated a position that the only reason they accept ECA financing is because the other receives it, except unilaterally, I believe we can disarm on this and have the private marketplace will step in readily. GECAS, ILFC, General Electric, there are many leasing companies with plenty of liquidity. There won't be any issue here that would prevent airplanes from being financed, particularly given as low as interest rates are right now and as liquid as markets are.
Moving on here, it's my understanding that Delta prefers sometimes the older planes. In air travel, you'd think the newer, the newest tech would be the best.
Well, we have a mix of both. Right now, Delta is in the process of buying 100 brand-new Boeing 737-900ERs. We're in the process of buying 40 new RJ-900s from Bombardier. But at the same time, we also are taking delivery of 88 717s from Southwest. The best example or the best notion of how to explain this is that we think a mix of airplanes is appropriate when you're operating the airline for a return on invested capital. From a passenger perspective, we run the most on-time, highest completion factor, all-around best airline in the world. And so when you have the operating capability we have, we operate basically a large fleet of just about every kind of airplane in the world. And so when you think about it from a technology perspective to your technology point, just think of it this way. The President of the United States flies around on some of the oldest aviation technology in the world, a first-generation 747-300, which was – that technology was invented in the 60s, 70s.
I was nine when the first one came out, I think.
Correct. The launch on the 74-100 was 1970.
1970. All right. I had just turned 10.
Okay. So you just turned 10. I had just turned 15, although I'd never been on an airplane before in my life at that point. But my point is that the new technology, we have a lot of new technology airplanes, but we also have a very good mix of airplanes, both mature fleet and new fleet.
Delta was one of the first to order 787 Dreamliners from Boeing. Then you deferred delivery for a few more years till 2020 at the earliest. Given the problems that have emerged with that aircraft, it's concerned about the batteries. Do you feel somehow vindicated in that decision?
No. Like I said, we're taking delivery of 100 new airplanes from Boeing. We're working with it. So we're close partners. We're probably one of the top Boeing operators in the world. So they're a good partner. Now, we were the first carrier back in 2003 to agree in principle to buy the 787. But when we examined the technical challenges of the airplane a couple of years ago, we decided we couldn't bear the technical risk. So we deferred ours out to 2020. I think one day Delta will operate 787s, but we're anxious to see the stretched version of that airplane, and we're anxious to see the Airbus A350. So we have a lot of new technology coming on the market, and you know, we operate a lot of new technology airplanes. We operate the 777-200LR, which is the longest flying airplane in aviation today. So we like that technology. We just want it to be proven.
Now, Mr. Anderson, let's talk about fees for flying, separate from the ticket price. I'm about to pay $524.80 to get from New York to Los Angeles. Some airlines, including yours, will hit me with a $25 fee if I check my first bag. Do you accept that some passengers find this annoying?
Well, I think all consumers always want a bargain. But well, first tip for you is get call Ken Chenault at American Express and get an American Express Delta co-branded card, and you'll get that first bag for free.
You know, interesting that you should say that. Maybe I see. Good thing that we talked, because look at that, my friend.
See, you use that card.
Look at that, my friend, right here.
You got it. You use that SkyMiles American Express card, and that first bag flies free.
All right, so fair enough in my example, but you are charging $25 to other people. You made about $1.6 billion in 2012 on fees, if the government data is correct. Some people just want to go online, pay the price that you charge, and be done with it.
Right. Well, let's back up and let's look at what the value of airfare is over the past decade. You know, the DOT publishes a lot of data that you can analyze. If you look at airfares today and fees and compare it to 2000, you're still 10% lower today on an inflation-adjusted basis. And if you actually look at the total share of the traveler's wallet, hotels have taken a larger share of the travel wallet since 2000, and airlines have shrunk a bit. When you think about aviation since deregulation, because often what we hear is, oh, well, we want to go back to the halcyon days of regulation. In 1979, there were only two fares offered in the marketplace, and the government established those fares. On an inflation-adjusted basis today, even including fees, real airfares are over 30% lower than they were when the government decided what fares were going to be. So all in all, given the transparency of the internet, what we've essentially done is made our product much more a la carte. So many business travelers don't check bags, and people want to have choices, and we offer people choices and give consumers the same sort of choice in an a la carte menu the way you would buying a computer, buying a laptop, buying cell phone service, or going to a hotel. So we're very much patterned after normal consumer behavior. And look, this is an incredibly competitive marketplace. And we like consumers to prefer Delta, and we realize that our products have to be competitive in the marketplace for us to win.
Did you say earlier that you hadn't been on an airplane by the time you were 15 years old?
I had not.
Family didn't travel that much at that stage?
No, my parents didn't. You know, we were the first generation that went to college. We lived in, I think at that point in time, we lived in Amarillo, Texas. And, you know, it wasn't until I think I was probably 18 or 19 that I got on an airplane for the first time, a DC-9 flown by Trans-Texas Airways from Amarillo, Texas to Houston, Texas.
And now I assume you get some frequent flyer miles?
You know, I don't actually collect frequent flyer miles. You know,
They're too hard to redeem, is that
no,
why?
I travel so much on Delta that, you know, I guess that's one of the perks of my job.
Richard Anderson, CEO of Delta Airlines, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Full disclosure, Delta is among the underwriters of the Marketplace Morning Report.